Don't be offended, said Mrs. Landar. He can't get over it. Frank will be here any minute, and we shall have lunch. How are you and your family? Is your father well? Frank arrived. He entered the room quickly and spoke very calmly. His calm had an air of great tension and caution, like the calm of generals at a map table, or of certain monomaniacs developing their idée fixe with pedantic logic. "Good of you to come," he said. "Excuse my lateness, I couldn't help it. Later I want to ask you several favours. I'm leaving." "When and where to?" I asked with the same tense calm. "To Zurich," he said. "Tomorrow morning, if possible. My father is still opposed, but I will go. You know what happened yesterday at the Kammergericht?" "I was there myself," I said. Oh dear, I remembered that Frank had been in court yesterday. "Well, then you know," he said, "there's nothing left for me here, so I'm leaving. You must help me get ready. Besides, I have just gotten engaged." "To Ellen?" "Yes, she's coming with me. I have to talk to her parents today. I'd be grateful if you could come along. She has to talk to them too. I need your help for many things today."
"And Hanni?"
"I will have to talk to her too tonight," he said. For a moment he seemed less calm and collected, and there was a strained sound to his voice. "That's a lot for one day," I said. "Yes," he said, "and you must help me get through it."
"Of course," I said, "I'm at your disposal."
Then we were called to lunch. Mrs. Landar tried without success to get a normal conversation going. Her husband kept bursting in. We sat mostly in silence. "Well, has he told you yet that he wants to leave?" Frank's father asked suddenly. "What do you think of that?"
"I think it's very sensible," I said. "He should leave while he can. What's left for him here?"
"Staying put," said the old man. "Just because of the troubles, he should stay, and not let them chase him away. He has passed his exams. He has the right to become a judge. Let's see if they can—"
"Oh, Papa," Frank interrupted impatiently. "I fear," I said, "that that right has evaporated since the Kammergericht judges allowed the S.A. into their chambers." I remembered what had happened, and I blushed. "I fear we have no position left to defend. We're all virtually prisoners now, and flight is the only alternative left to us. I want to leave, too." I really did want to leave, though not quite by tomorrow morning.
"You too?" asked Mr. Landau. "Why you?"
He could obviously not get rid of the idea that as an Aryan I must have become a Nazi. He had probably experienced that too often recently to consider any other possibility. "Because I dislike what's happening here," I said. It sounded rather thin and arrogant, though I had just wanted to say it as simply as possible. The old man did not reply and sank into silence.
"I shall lose both my sons in one day," he said after a while.
"Oh, Ernst," cried his wife.
"The little one needs an operation," he said. "The most beautiful acute appendicitis. I can't do it. My hands are not steady enough. And will anybody else do it today? Shall I phone around and beg? Oh, dear colleague, or dear ex-colleague, would you operate on my son, for God's sake? But he's a Jew."
"So-and-so will do it," said Mrs. Landau. She mentioned a name that I have forgotten.
"Well, he ought to," said her husband. "He laughed and said to me, 'We did amputations in a field hospital together for 2 years, but can one tell today?'"
"I'll phone him," said Mrs. Landau. "I'm sure he'll do it."
She was quite magnificent that day. After the meal, we went in to see the sick boy for a few minutes. He smiled awkwardly as though he had done something naughty, suppressing a moan from time to time.
"So you're leaving?" he asked his brother.
"Yes."
"Well, I can't go today," the young boy said. "Will you say goodbye to me later?"
Frank looked dejected as we left the room. "It's horrible," I said.
"Yes, it is truly horrible," he replied.
"I don't know what will become of the boy. He can't stand injustice, and he has no means of coping with it. Do you know what he told me yesterday after all that has happened? He would like to save Hitler's life, and then say to him, 'Right, I'm a Jew. Now let's talk things over for an hour.'"
We went into Frank's room. Open suitcases lay around, and suits had been laid out. It was about 2 o'clock.
"At 6 I have to meet Ellen at Wannsee Station," he said. "So we have to leave at 5. There's a lot to do till then."
"Packing?" I said.
"That too," he said. "But mainly something else. This is where I need your help. I have a pile of stuff, old letters, old pictures, old diaries, poems, souvenirs and whatever. I don't want to leave it all here, but I can't take it with me. I don't want to destroy it all. Would you look after some of it?"
"Of course."
We have to go through it all now. It's fairly untidy. Some of it can just be thrown away. Shall we try and go through it quickly?
He pulled open a drawer. Two great heaps of papers, albums, and diaries lay inside. His past life. A large part of it was also mine.
Frank took a deep breath and smiled. We have to get a move on. We haven't got much time.
And so we went through the papers, opened old letters, let old photos run through our fingers. Oh, what flowed out toward us there! It was our youth that had been preserved in that drawer, like dried flowers in an album, their perfume made stronger and more concentrated by being dead, belonging irretrievably to the past. Old pictures of us in sporting dress among friends, of a boat trip with some girls. My God, do you remember?
Beach pictures, bathed in the sun of distant days, our faces patches of light and shade, tennis pictures of happy days.
Where were the friends now, with whom we saw ourselves arm in arm, the cheerful girls chasing tennis balls, forever suspended by the shutter's click?
Frank opened envelopes. Manuscripts that had once been familiar and exciting reappeared and called urgently for our attention. Here was one in my handwriting as it had been a few years ago.
We are all familiar with the great clean-out. It is a job for rainy Sundays, and we all know the nostalgic titillation of conjuring up the past, the irresistible urge to read everything again, to experience everything again, also the narcotic stupor that gradually creeps over us with its yielding softness. It always costs one whole day, and usually the night as well, and the longer it goes on, the more one yields to these dreams. We had just 3 hours, and we raced through our dream landscapes with the flickering speed of a cartoon chase. In addition, we had to be strict and destructive. The big box had room only for the most valuable items, which would lie there gathering dust for some far-off moment of leisure and smiles. When would I experience that again?
The rest went into the waste paper basket.
A field trial of our own youth. What had value? What was important? We grew ever more silent at our strange work. Time was running out. We had to be quick. Quick at killing or burying.
We were interrupted twice. The first time Mrs. Landar came in to say that the ambulance was waiting outside. Frank's brother was being taken to the clinic for the operation. She and her husband would go with him. If Frank wanted to say goodbye, now was the time.
Yes, said Frank.
It was a strange parting. One brother headed for the operating theatre, the other for exile.
Excuse me a moment, said Frank, and he left with his mother. He stayed away 5 minutes.